Welcome back to Juneau Afternoon, made possible with support from Hanson Gress, delivering IT support to local businesses for over 15 years. And with me next is our next guest, UAS Outdoor Studies Professor Forrest Wagner. He's going to preview his fireside lecture tonight, happening tonight. It's titled Outside Lies Magic. We were just kind of welcome to the show, Forrest. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks, Andy. Yeah, happy to be here.
Yeah, and we were just kind of talking a little bit about the whole concept. It's pretty broad, right? Outside lies magic. I think a lot of us that enjoy the natural environment feel that way. Maybe we don't sort of articulate it or think about it every time we're outdoors, but it certainly is a reason why we get outdoors.
Yeah, I think it is broad, but the gist really is a conversation about values, about environment, about ethics as rules of right and wrong that we decide upon culturally. And so the talk tonight begins with a brief reading from this historian at Harvard whose title of his book is Outside Lies Magic, and John Stilgo. And his idea really is that we unplug, step outside. Doesn't have to be necessarily a natural landscape, but that we slow down and sort of take in a way that we're not necessarily doing at this point in the current age.
It is interesting. I mean, I find myself falling into it as well. I'm in a beautiful place, and instead of just being there, I get out my iPhone because I want to take a picture of it, and I want to capture it, and I want to, it's like I want to prove I was there. I want to be the one that showed how this, all those things. Those are actually, a lot of those are kind of artistic impulses, and that's great. That's one way of enjoying it. But I think you're right. We're so surrounded by this ability to have technology and the ability to enhance our everyday environment that we do that when we get outdoors, and maybe that's not the point.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Taking those photos, they become the memory in this way that maybe wasn't the case before cameras. I love taking photos and actually really love those memories. Doing this talk, I called my dad, who is in Fairbanks, and I wanted these photos of all of these experiences that were pre-digital, and I couldn't really get them because he's got this plan, post-retirement plan, to digitize the family photos, but
many of our parents go through that plan. Yes, I've been there as well.
but there's this one of me with a huge king salmon that I caught in on the Galkana River, and it was this sort of epic fishing story that my brother reminded me of. We were young. I was in my teens. We'd raft this river. It's a wild and scenic river, so a federally designated preserved space. There are a number in Alaska.
But really out there.
Yeah, out there.
Yeah, right.
And I had caught this fish and fought it for 45 minutes. The thing weighed maybe 65 pounds.
One of those
broke
monsters.
The line. I was heartbroken. My brother's just like in shock. We're really just kids.
Right.
We've been rafting this river with our parents since we were little, and it was sort of this family ritual in the summer. And then the fishing line had gotten wrapped around a snag in the river downstream. And so we're walking back to where our camp is and can see this huge salmon
still on
hooked.
The line.
The line snapped. It's wrapped. And so I wade out there, grabbed the thing, and I had kind of forgotten how sort of unbelievable that story is. And I wanted to show that slide, not because it relates directly to the outside lies magic, but in thinking about how to do this fireside chat, I had various ideas.
Sure, yeah.
And at this point, none of the slides that I'm showing include fishing stories, but it is weird that my dad he wrote back. He's like, I have all these photos from 2000 on. I'm like, I have all those, Dad. That's like, that's
right. Those are the digital ones.
That's
when
it became digital.
Right.
Yeah. But anyway, the talk tonight is about
this is fascinating, isn't it? I think that's a thing that naturalists, maybe before the advent of this instantaneous photography that we have, were able to capture, you know, when you think about John Muir or people like that, who really had this deep, deep connection. And part of that deep, deep connection was they were having to just live in that moment, and that was it. The memory was the memory. The memory wasn't the photo, because then that's that funny thing that happens to us, right? The photos almost become the memory.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, that's just an interesting thing. But I think that it maybe does tie into everything you're saying here, which is that that sort of broader philosophical discussion about what is it to be outdoors? What is the value of outdoors? What's the value of us interacting with that? And then that bigger question, why should we work so hard to protect it?
And so those are the initial brushstrokes. In the talk tonight, I'm going to highlight some pretty big minds over the course of the kind of intro. And the whole idea is to have a discussion with the audience about what it is we as a community or as a state or as a region or as a nation value about the environment, what it is that, you know, really we are protecting in our democracy. But yeah, I start with the John Stilgo Outside Lies Magic, and from there turn to Aldo Leopold, who is the first real conservation biologist to identify that megafauna predators are critical for a complete ecosystem. And, you know, thinking about images, photographs as a way to tell stories, I end my kind of quotation section of the talk with a reading from Ernestine Hayes, who's a colleague of mine at the University of Alaska and is actually the Alaska Writer Laureate. And her piece really is this creation story, this raven natural intelligence story. That and the whole idea really is that we're telling stories and passing information, values, morals about ourselves and about how we interact with the world through those stories. And we do that with photos too, but before we had photos, it was a written sort of tradition, or in the case of indigenous peoples, this millennial oral tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to highlight this continuing tension between animals and predator prey interactions and how we reckon that as people. And then I'm going to think a little bit about wildness with a reading from Thoreau. And
I wanted to ask you, and not to bring up an unpleasant subject, but many people know that you were in a pretty horrific bear attack, and thank God survived. And it's great to have you here and looking great and hale and hearty. And
thanks.
It's good to see you in good health. Did that change your outlook on this subject?
Coincidentally, the next scholar that I'm going to read a short paragraph from in the talk is Val Plumwood, who is an Australian environmental philosopher and feminist, and coincidentally has also survived this incredible predator-prey interaction. She was attacked by a crocodile in the mid-80s in a remote national park in Australia. She was alone canoeing and miraculously escaped the water and then crawled to eventual rescue. But her piece really is, I think, building on the idea that it is these predator-prey interactions. In this case, I share this experience with Val Plumwood that lend themselves to an enlightened worldview, one where it's a more than human world, and how we live in the world really should be in relation to other creatures. And so thinking about our environmental precarity in relation to the Anthropocene or climate change, it's also, I think, in relation to this idea that, you know, if it is that humans are the center of the universe, that maybe that misses some pretty critical things about taking a step back and being present and appreciating where we are and what we have. And so I'm not going to talk too much tonight about my bear attack situation, but I'm happy to answer questions about it. And I do think that experience, much like Plumwood's experience, planted seeds that are continuing to bear fruit for me as a human, trying to imagine and reckon this kind of ecocentric world, or less human-centered and more accepting that, yeah, there are a lot of things at play on the planet, and that, you know, that we need to reckon that, especially with climate change and how that relates psychologically, I think, to outdoor studies, is that, you know, and by going outside, we are actually participating in a form of therapy. And so for many people, including Val Plumwood and I suspect myself, there's this underlying sense of health and wellness from being outside, from interacting with the natural world, sometimes sharing those experiences with other people. I mean, that's one of the main reasons that I still want to teach outdoor studies, is the small group experience is really valuable. It's in many ways an ideal democracy, and that process of working people and seeing decisions get made collaboratively is really powerful and endearing and engaging. I mean, humans are interesting. Mm-hmm. It's interesting to work with people outside in small groups. But the underlying thrust of the talk is that by going outside, by accepting if we choose to, that it is magic, that there's benefit there to slow down. And also, I mean, I obviously engage in high consequence activities and am an outdoor professional, teach climbing and skiing, and that it doesn't necessarily need to be constantly a stretching of the rubber band per se. Like it's not necessarily always this risk to reward, let's push this and get to the top. It can in fact be something more along the lines of being outside, making good decisions, learning from that, beginning to understand that the natural world, that nature is in control, and taking that as a kind of lesson in humility. And then the other piece that's interesting in this conversation about eco-psychology, which is really sort of what I'm talking about now, is that research now indicates that people who engage in degrading behavior toward the environment often struggle with addiction. And so through some coaching and working with people outside, it can actually be psychologically really beneficial in regular life. Mm. So, yeah, that's kind of the thrust of the talk.
Well, it sounds fascinating. I could talk to you for a couple more hours about it. But once again, it's Forrest Wagner, the outdoor studies professor at UAS, and it's the Fireside Lecture. It's happening tonight. Do you have two lectures happening tonight? Is that how it's going to go?
Yeah, there's one at 6:30 and then one at 8. And they're at the Mendenhall Visitor Center. Everyone knows where it is.
Yep. And as you say, you're sort of structuring it like you want it to be a fairly interactive talk.
Yeah, that's the idea. Yeah. I have a few slides and a few concepts, and then hoping to engage the audience throughout, but that we have adequate time for a real discussion, because the talk's going to conclude really with, thinking about Alaska in this critical moment. You know, 2 years now of out-migration and continuing budget realities that – quite stressful. Obviously, the national arena is quite stressful. And, you know, the slides I show tonight are all slides of land that's in some kind of designated preservation, conservation status. It's public land, and it can't necessarily stay that way. That was voted in by our democracy. But one of the conversations I want to have is really, you know, why we value, how we continue to value preserved public lands in Alaska, in the nation. This is a sort of success of our democracy. It's an opinion, but so that's where the talk will end.
And opinions welcome tonight.
Yeah, absolutely.
At the talk, 6:30 and 8 o'clock at the fireside lecture out at the Mendenhall Visitor Center. Forrest Wagner, UAS Outdoor Studies Professor. Thanks so much for coming in. Great to see you again.
Thanks, Andy.
All right, coming up very appropriately here is Bird Note.